usually I need two hands to grasp a pointer, you know. We're here to talk about MACD, moving average convergence divergence, which is sort of a hybrid between a trend following indicator and a momentum oscillator. This is something that I devised about 18 years ago, which is about the time that I took that picture of that handsome guy that appears in the program. I was wondering whether anybody would recognize me. Yeah. My staff says I should really update it, but if they don't know about my stop, if I lose the negative, it's my high school graduation picture. Anyway, I invented the MACD just before then. No, it won't work. And maybe, you know, maybe that's why I was smiling. We have a lot of material to cover today, and I'm really, you know, very scripted. And this thing, if I talk fast, runs for 2 hours. We're going to go through. MACD has been around a long time. I mean, you know, we're talking 18, 19 years now, and it's become very popular. But surprisingly, there's very little written about it. I did a videotape 6 or 7 years ago. Don't buy the tape. It's on sale for $200. Don't buy it. You're seeing it today. You know, you don't have to do that one. But apart from that tape, there's really not very much on it. I did a couple of monographs when the thing came out. A lot of people thereafter kind of picked up on some of what I said in the monographs and began to, and wrote about it and evaluate MACD, and they default the computers to the parameters in those monographs, and that's really not the way it should be used. What happened was it was something I devised before I had a computer, and I was doing the whole thing on a hand calculator, and they didn't have a lot of facility for testing and fooling, you know, as it did since. So what you're getting today is the way I use MACD now. It doesn't mean it's the only way to use it. I'm sure other people, you know, other speakers and experienced traders and you yourselves, you know, may have your own ways of using it, you know, that will work just as well, if not better, than what I do. It's just all I can do is transmit what I do. Secondly, there's another caveat is I don't trade in too many markets. Basically, I'm a mutual fund trader. My business, besides doing my newsletter, is managing money trading mutual funds, and once in a while I wander off into futures, you know, usually the index futures. I do a lot of option trading, index option trading, and you know, maybe a bit of treasury bond here or there, or if I feel very venturesome, I'll buy a Swiss franc every 6 months. But you're talking to a stock market guy, and you know, who doesn't know anything about soybeans or jelly beans or cattle or anything like that. So that if you fellows trade in those markets, I cannot say to you with any assurance that the parameters or the techniques that I'll be talking about are applicable to your markets. You have to experiment for yourself. So much for that caveat, okay? Almost all the charts you'll see, except for a couple of oddballs, will relate to the New York Stock Exchange Index, which happens to be the index that I've done almost all my research on. This is a capitalization-rated index of all the 3,000 stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. I like it a little better than the S&P 500 because it encompasses the whole market as opposed to the 500 S&P stocks. But basically, the correlation between the New York Stock Exchange Index and the S&P 500, if I take a guess, is probably about 97 or 98. They're virtually synonymous in how they act. You'll see about 30 years worth of charts by the time we're through. We have charts that will take a look to go all the way back to 1968, and they'll go forward practically to a couple of, you know, few weeks ago as recently as I could send to people my material and have it reproduced in the book. So you have a pretty good idea over a long time frame about how MACD works. And we're also going to be seeing charts of a lot of different time frames, ranging from day trading time frames to major long-term time frames like monthly charts. Now about questions. Okay. I'm very scripted, as I mentioned before, and we have it's very tight whether we're going to get all the stuff in. Yeah, over here? Can you make on the sign? Can you put on the sign? Wait, there's some wires coming. Oh, wait, don't lock them. Okay, thanks. Okay, it's all right. You know, it's just, don't bother. It's after the first 5 minutes, and I decide that the audience are a bunch of friendlies, I don't have to hide behind it. okay, questions. I'll stop here and there for questions, but try not to interrupt me too much. I'm a very compulsive guy. I got a script. If I lose my place, I get in all sorts of anxiety fits and I get discombobulated. Then I have to start all over again. You don't want to see that happen. All right? So when we stop. It'll be okay. I think it's a pretty good presentation. I mean, if you wait, it's pretty clear. Try it. Right? Now we're gonna start with the basic structure of MACD. I don't know. I know everybody has it on their computer. I don't know how many people are actually familiar with what makes it, what those lines are. Then we'll move into the basic buy and sell signals, and then we're going to begin to up the ante a little bit. We're going to improve the buy and sell signals, then we're going to delay the buy and sell signals, and then we'll see when we can bypass buy and sell signals, and we'll combine MACD with some other stuff. And by the time we're through, I think you have a pretty good notion of what I do with it. You know, and again, it's not necessarily what you want to do with it. So let's start with chart one here. This is the basic structure of MACD. Now, with MACD, the MACD line consists of, it's created with two moving averages. These are exponential moving averages. You could probably use regular moving averages, but for various reasons, I prefer and suggest exponentials. If you don't know what an exponential average is, or you don't know how to construct it, not to worry. Instructions are in the material that the seminar provided to you. An exponential moving average behaves sort of like a front-weighted moving average. It gives more weight to the recent data than the past data, so that it kind of makes the average more sensitive to recent trends in the stock market than to the entire period covered by the average. They're also very easy to construct. They're easier to maintain than a moving average. And they also have another characteristic because of how they're constructed, is that when the price penetrates the average must turn down. I mean, if the price penetrates from up to down, the average must turn down. If the price penetrates from down to up, then the average must turn up. So as you see here, as the price goes through that these two moving averages here, the moving average has to turn down with the price. Now, MACD uses two exponential averages, one which we call the fast average and one which we call the slow average. I'll figure out how to do this now. Okay. The fast average will track more closely with price than the slow average, which needs more time to respond. So as we can see, as the trend moves up, the fast average moves away from the slow average. The moving averages diverge. When the trend moves down, the fast average first crosses and then moves down and away from the slow average. So again, when the trend is taking place, let's see, is it better to do this here? Might be better for you. I'm not sure it's easier for me to keep tabs of where I'm at. We'll try to wing it in one way or another. Anyway, as a trend develops, the moving averages separate. In a downtrend, the fast average moves far away from the slow one. In an uptrend, it moves far away, but this time to the upside. As the trends cross, you know, the moving averages cross. That's why they call it moving average convergence divergence. The moving averages converge, they move apart. They have diverged, they move apart. They converge, they move together. You understand that? That as the trend reverses, the moving averages begin to approach each other, and then they move apart again. Now this distance between the fast moving average and the slow moving average, it's fast minus slow. This difference between the fast moving average and the slow moving average, fast minus slow, is plotted in a scale on the bottom. These histogram lines represent the difference between the two moving averages. Can you see that? When the fast moving average stands above the slow moving average, the histogram is positive. When the fast moving average is below the slow moving average, the histogram is negative. That histogram, the difference between the two moving averages, is called the MACD line. It can be plotted as a line, it can be plotted as a histogram. Okay, just for the sake here, I'm just plotting it as a histogram, but we'll change that quickly enough. When the two moving averages are in the same place, that line will stand at zero. Now, in this particular chart, the difference on the upside and on the downside happen to be maximum along with price. In other words, as price peaks here, we have the maximum difference between the two moving averages, and as price is bottom here, we have the maximum negative difference between the two moving averages. This is not always the case. In fact, it's probably not usually the case. It just happens to be so on this chart. Okay, time frames. The chart I just showed you is a daily chart. The two moving averages are probably something like 12 and 25 days, or 6 and 19 days, you know, whatever. But it's a daily chart. You can use MACD on any time frame. So if I talk about 6 days and 19 days, I could also mean 6 months and 19 months. I could mean 6 5-minute ticks and 19 5-minute ticks. One of the nice qualities about MACD is that it's you have to make very little alteration in it, if any, for the type of trading you're doing, long-term, intermediate-term, daily trading, or day trading. The same parameters, the same rules operate, which, you know, is not really surprising, because the principles of technical analysis, volume, accumulation, momentum, cycles, so forth, so on, these all operate in any time frame. You know, the rules don't change, simply the time frame changes. So an MACD of all the indicators I use is probably the best in this regard. I plotted in all time frames. You know, it's one of my really significant indicators that I use. Now, for best reliability, whatever the time frame you trade in, plot the next slowest time frame. In other words, if you're a day trader, by which I mean you either trade on 5-minute charts or 15-minute charts or hourly charts, you probably will get more reliable, not necessarily more profitable, but more reliable results if you take your trades in the direction of the daily trend. In other words, besides plotting your hourly chart, take MACD patterns of daily charts as well, to get the daily trend of the market, and then you do your day trading in conformity. If you're a daily-based position trader, that is someone who maybe trades for 3 or 4 week periods, excuse me, you'll do better if you also plot weekly charts and trade in the direction of the weekly trend. You know, so you're always trading in the direction of the next longer trend. This will not necessarily be more profitable. It's just more reliable. The reason it's not more profitable is that when you do that, you give up the chance to be in the market or out of the market or short the market at a major turning point. I mean, at the very lows of a bear market, all trends are going to be down. So if you follow that procedure, you're never going to get in. You know? So it's like a trade-off. You decide whether you want reliability as opposed to being in the game at all times. All my research says you're about break-even. But so it depends on how much you like to take losses or can stand losses. Okay, chart two. We introduce here another element. The top scale is the one we saw before. The MACD line, the difference between the fast minus the slow moving average. We have now taken that line, which first was a histogram, and then we put a line on top of it, and now we're plotting the MACD line as a line and no longer as a histogram. Can you all make out what I've done there? Okay. Now we've created a signal line. Whoops. It's awful. That dotted line. The signal line is an exponential average of the MACD line. Okay? So the MACD line, once again, the MACD line is the fast minus the slow average. You can plot that usually as a solid line or as a histogram. The signal line, which we plot as a dotted line generally, is an exponential average of the MACD line. So we're taking a moving average of the difference of moving averages. Now, how long should these be? The MACD lines you can plot, and we'll be seeing different examples, you can plot with different combinations. Generally speaking, the slower moving average should be 2 to 4 times the length of the faster moving average. So if you're using a fast moving average in your MACD line, say at 6 days, your slow moving average, you know, that's fast minus slow, slow moving average be anywhere between 12, say, and 20, 21, 22 days, something like that. I usually use a 6 and a 19, but I'm not sure that that's absolutely the best. It just works fine for me. If you're using something slower, say you're using 19 days as your fast MACD average, then you would use something about twice as fast, twice as slow, say maybe 39 or 40 days for your slow moving average. Remember, it's fast minus slow. The slow is usually twice or 3 times the length of the fast. Excuse me. The longer the moving averages that you use, the less sensitive the MACD lines are, which has its plus and minuses, as we'll see. Something that's too sensitive can track the market too closely and create a lot of whipsaws. Something that's not sensitive enough can delay your entries and exits beyond where you want them to be. We'll be going over some recommended parameters, you know, that I like. The signal line can be anywhere from about 3 days to 9 days. I use 3 days for my really fast MACD combinations that I want to get for instant triggers, and I use 9 days for my slower ones. Again, this is my use in the U.S. stock market. If you fellows trade in your things, you may want to test that out for yourself. Now, it kind of follows that a buy signal, this is very, very loose, just for starters. A buy signal takes place when the MACD line crosses from below to above its signal line. In other words, here's a buy signal. The MACD line, which is a solid line, is crossing its signal line. A sell signal takes place when the MACD line crosses from above to below its signal line. Sell signal here, and there's a sell signal here. We have one buy signal, and there's presumptively a buy signal back here. This sell signal would have lined up around there. This buy signal would have lined up around there. This sell signal would have lined up around there. Now, you notice that the buy and sell signals generated by MACD usually take place ahead of the moving average crossings. There are a lot of moving average crossing systems around the stock, in circulation that depend upon two moving averages that cross each other. One of the reasons I prefer MACD is that there's often a time delay in these moving average crossing systems that does not take place with MACD. I mean, delays enough at times, but you tend to get more timely signals, at least I think so. So, for example, the crossing of these moving averages takes place up in here, where the histogram is zero. You see how much sooner the buy signal came in? The sell signal takes place up in here. I guess that's about synonymous. On this one here, you have a sell signal from MACD, and the moving averages have yet to cross. Okay. This is chart two for the people on the tape. So MACD, again, loosely, buy signals take place when the MACD line crosses from below to above its signal line, vice versa for sell signals. One proviso. Buy signals are much, much more reliable, and in fact, I almost generally, I would usually ignore them, unless the MACD line has first fallen to below zero before the cross. For buy signal to take place, except in the strongest of markets, the MACD, your MACD buy line, the MACD line, has to have gone below zero since the last sell before it crosses up. All right? Because what sometimes happens is you get a downside penetration of the signal line up near a market top, and then the market will give one more little blip, and you'll get a recross, but that is not a safe area to buy. You want some form of sell-off to have taken place before you step into the market. Conversely, sell signals should not be taken, generally speaking, unless MACD has risen above zero. You'll find that sell signals that take place with the when MACD has given a buy, has not risen above zero, and then recrosses at the bottom, are not generally very reliable sell signals, because all that's taking place is the market, most of the time when that pattern occurs, is simply doing a retest of its previous lows, and you're being sold into what is really a good buying area. We have stop-out procedures in place, which we'll get to. But remember, for buy to take place, except in, most unusual circumstances, you want your MACD line to have first been below zero, and then it could be above zero at the cross, but it first has to have fallen below zero. Sell signals should take place above zero. So in this particular case, on this chart, here's the zero line. MACD fell to that minus two. Okay, so this is a valid buy signal. This is a valid sell signal because it's above zero, and that's a valid sell signal because it's above zero. Right. Chart 3 is essentially what I've been speaking about. I've just marked off the buys and sells on the chart, and you can see where they hit, and you can see that they take place in advance of moving average crossings. Right. The use of the signal line applied to the difference between the two moving averages, and the use of exponential moving averages rather than straight moving averages, makes MACD more sensitive to trend changes in the typical moving average crossing system. Now, I don't think we have to go through this one again. We've already been there. One inching? That's the difference in points. The question is, what does the 1 and 2 mean on the scale? That's the difference in New York Stock Exchange points between the two moving averages. In other words, one moving average was a New York Stock Exchange index 58, and the other one was 59, that would be plus one or minus one. 58 is fast, minus slow, it's just a scale. Okay, important chart. I don't know how many of you folks have been through other workshops here already, or at the previous workshops, or just how many of you have all sorts of experience to start with, but not all buy and sell signals are created equally. Not in MACD, not in any timing indicator you might use. Some are more equal than others. And here's the first concept I want to get across, and it's a very important one. In terms of determining when you actively or aggressively want to follow buy signals or not, this has to do with divergences. Now, a divergence in the stock market in technical jargon means that the prices of price movement of the stock market or any other market is not being confirmed by measures of price momentum. Price momentum is how fast a price is rising, not whether they are rising. In other words, if it takes a week for the New York index to go from 50 to 55, say, and the next week it goes from 55 to 58, well, it's still advancing, so the price trend is still up, but the rate at which prices are moving is diminishing. It gained 5 points 1 week and 3 points the next week. Generally speaking, most markets do not make final peaks until there is some evidence that price momentum, the rate at which prices are rising, begins to diminish. MACD is one measure of price momentum. The difference, the spread that can develop between the fast and the slow moving average is a measure of momentum, of how much speed the market is generating. So let's just take some examples here, okay? At point one, area one here, we have a sell signal. The conditions are met. The MACD line is above zero, it crosses the signal line, and there's a sell. But, at least so far as we can see on this chart, there are no negative divergences that precede the sell. A negative divergence takes place when price makes a new high, but your measure of momentum does not make a new high with price. Right, let's get this again. Negative divergence. Price makes a new high. Your measure of momentum does not make a new high along with price. That is an indication that the next decline will probably be very tradable. So let's see what happens now. Back to area one. No negative divergence, we have a quick decline and an immediate recovery to new highs. You could have sold here, bought here, it did go below zero, just a touch, and you probably would have broken even more or less on the transaction.
Oh, just looking at it, it's probably like a 12 to 25 day. That's about 9 day. All set? Now let's see what happens here at area two. Okay, so we get a sell, we get a re-entry, but we wouldn't particularly have been interested in aggressively following that sell signal because there were no negative divergences. Now at area two, prices have made a new high, right? But the MACD line fails to make a new high. That is a negative divergence. That says that this sell signal is much more likely to be meaningful than the sell signal at one. A couple of other things to watch. Notice the slope of the MACD line here and the slope of the MACD line here. Okay? You can see how the advance from this valley here up to there had less impulse than this advance. It's always a good thing to look for slopes. Right? Now at 2, we have a negative divergence. You notice how we can draw these lines differently? Therefore, we can expect that cell signal to be more significant. And therefore, it would be followed, and if you felt like playing the market on both sides, this is where you'd be selling short. Not a 1, you might be interested short a 2. Now, this is the same pattern. This happens to be a daily chart. You could look at the same pattern, an hourly chart, or in a 5-minute chart if you're day trading. It was the same game. You're looking for negative divergences to aggressively follow sell signals. Now, what happens when we come down? Now, we come down to 3, and we get a buy signal, right? Did we have a positive divergence? A positive divergence takes place when prices make a low, but the momentum oscillator does not make a new low. It's just the reverse of a negative divergence. So we have a buy signal of 3, and you probably follow it just because you want to follow your buy signals, but at 4, we have a much better buy signal. Because now we have prices making a new low, the oscillator, the MACD line, does not make a new low, prices are in a descending trend, MACD is in a rising trend, this becomes a very good buy signal. Now, when I see negative divergences up like there at 2, and positive divergences down at 4, I do not myself wait for the signal lines to cross before taking positions. I will do so on any change of direction in the MACD line. I want to get a jump. These are good enough patterns that you can anticipate the trade, especially if you're dealing with stock index futures, because once the boys on the floor sense that a trend change is taking and you're trying to buy, they suddenly bid up the premiums. You know? And if you're dealing with index options, you know, then the premium relationships change. You're better to buy before the crowd begins popping in. So if I see negative divergences, I will sell on a turn down in the MACD line, even if it hasn't crossed the signal line. If I see positive divergences, I will take a turn up in the MACD line, even if the signal line has not been crossed. For day trading, it may be good for 10 minutes, or 5 minutes, or an hour. For daily trading, it may get me in a day sooner, out a day sooner. That makes a big difference on your profitability. So, you know, when I was talking about cross signal lines being a general rule, that's just a general rule. With the divergences in place, positive or negative, I'll anticipate them. Okay? Now we go, after the really good buy at 4, and we sure enough trade, we go up into area 5. In the first area, 1, 2, 3, MACD line is sort of confirming the new highs in price, so obviously the rate of advances is not confirming it. At this little blip in here, there we have a really clear negative divergence. I didn't draw it in too well, but you can see that as we moved into early September, prices actually made a new closing high, but the MACD line did not. So you had your negative divergence within that consolidation period up in there. Does everybody see what I'm talking about? So that was enough to create the sell signal right there, that especially this little double top, that little extra top in here, which made a new high, and you can see how MACD failed to go with it. Okay? Therefore, 5 turned out to be a pretty good selling area as well, and we had, of course, a really nice decline to follow. This chart continues the price action from the previous chart. It's a continuation of that chart. There's area 5 with its nice divergence. We had a real good sell-off. And what happens at 6 and 7? Well, the same thing that happened between 3 and 4 before. As prices make a double bottom, right? MACD turns up a nice positive divergence. You see between points 6 and 7 how MACD is rising while prices are flat, making a really good buy between the two of them, right? Turns out to be a really nice trade. Now into area 8 and 9, and we have the same thing, a big spread between 8 and 9 with prices working higher. The MACD line does not work higher. You get a negative divergence at 9. This would have been probably tradable, although I imagine you would have had trouble doing much more than breaking even. Prices dropped sharply, but they didn't drop in any protracted manner, so they dropped, immediately rebounded, and you probably would have come back in just about where you went out. Okay. The decline off 9 has a longer lasting quality. I don't really know how far down it continued, but you could see it certainly continued for many more days. So once again, the best selling occurs when you have a negative divergence preceding the sell. The best buying occurs when you have some sort of a positive divergence preceding the sell. Okay? You may want to start, not every buy signal presents a nice double bottom, sometimes they just come up in spikes. So you would certainly want to take some positions on the first signal. But, you know, if you get the second one, then you can either add more aggressively to your position, or up your leverage or whatever you do when you feel especially happy, you know. This is just to compare, we'll just take a couple of charts to compare MACD to some other technical indicators that people follow. The bottom scale of the chart, top scale is the New York Index from 1984 to 85. The middle scale is slow MACD combination. How does this work? Does this work okay on the screen? Because I can't see the screen. Okay. This is a slow MACD combination, a 19 minus 39. It's slow and it makes very nice even waves. You know, you can see how nice and smoothly the lines are that it creates when you use the slow one. On the bottom scale here is a 25-day rate of change of the New York Stock Exchange Index. Rate of change indicators are constructed by taking a 25-day rate of change measures the amount of change over the last 25 days, so you subtract 26 days ago from now. If the New York Index 26 days ago was at 50 and it's at 55 now, the rate of change for 25 days is plus 5. It has gained 5 units over the last 25 days. All right, everyone follow in? If it was a 10-day rate of change, if the New York Index 11 days ago was 53, today it's 55, the 10-day rate of change would be plus 2. Like with MACD, rate of change measurements tend to turn down before the final peak in prices takes place. You usually won't get a final peak at the same time that you get a final peak in momentum. Only when you get kind of a parabolic spike does that occur, like when gold hit $800 in 1980, it went up like a flagpole, you know, and everything peaked at the same time. And then it just came down like a spike. Most of the times in the stock market, prices don't spike to a top. They roll over. They spike to bottoms. So that we'll see more application of this, but generally speaking, in the stock market, you usually have time to get out. You know, euphoria doesn't generally just die overnight. Even the 1987 crash, the real peak to that market did not take place in October of 1987. It took place in August. The 1987 high, the October high, was a secondary high that was not as high as the August high. Stock prices don't usually spike. Sometimes NASDAQ does. The major market averages almost never do. Okay? So we use rate of change measurements in the same way as we use MACD measurements to create, to look for divergences, top, double tops, double bottoms, so forth, so on. Now, let's just compare, though, the type of action you have with MACD as compared to the 25-day rate of change. They both give pretty good buy signals together here in July. Okay, now look what happens as you come up. The MACD line gets above its signal line, moves smoothly and happily away before it finally comes down and gives a sell signal. Okay, there's not much doubt about where and when that sell signal is being given. Whereas if you look at the 20-day rate of change, you see how irregular that is by comparison. Similarly, if we move into the February time frame, we've had a nice rally here coming into 1985. MACD does its thing, moves up nice double bottom, rising double bottom here. Notice the divergence, by the way, here before the sell. What happens with the 25-day rate of change? It gets a real nice double top right at the peak. But what do you do about that double top? Right? That would constitute a sell signal also, if you go by just by that, right? And all these little jagged things in between. Right? It's not that the patterns are dissimilar. It's just that MACD is so much smoother. Right? Now, the way Wells Wilder, I think it was about 1977, 1978, or maybe 79 if I recall correctly, wrote a really interesting book called, I think it was New Concepts in Technical Analysis, in which he made some very significant contributions. One of which was Wells Wilder's Relative Strength Index, or RSI. I don't want to go into the how it's created or maintained. I think some other speakers, at this conference will do so. But again, we're comparing RSI to MACD. And again, we have the same problem, or not the same problem, but the same differences that we saw when we compared MACD to the 25-day rate of change. The lines are just much smoother. Now, both indicators gave really nice rising double bottom formations at the bottom with the positive divergences in both. You see, price dropped to new lows. Both indicators made rising bottoms. But again, it becomes, at least to me, simpler to see what is taking place when you use the MACD lines than when you use the RSI lines. I leave to you, whether you find that to be the case yourself. By the way, we're going to go into more discussion of this a little later on. MACD of every indicator I've ever seen, and I'm going to make this point two or three more times until you're sick of hearing it, is the best indicator I have ever seen for catching the ends of severe market declines. Bar none. It is just terrific. And this here, we had a decline of about 98 to about 88 on the New York Index, which is about a 12% decline. Notice that MACD produced its buy signal just a couple days after the bottom, right in here. This is not an unusual event. I didn't just happen to pick this chart. I have yet to see a severe intermediate decline that was not caught at the end by MACD. I don't know why it's so good. It just is. If you don't like it for anything else, you should use it just for that. Now, I'm not here to sell the notion of discarding every other indicator and just using this. I don't get a royalty depending on how many MACD charts are out in the world. So it's really all the same to me, but, I figure I should mention it anyhow. And if some other guy comes around at the seminar or the conference saying, use RSI, please don't say Appel said not to. I don't mean to say not to. you know, for one thing, I don't mean to say not to. For another thing, I think it's a good idea to, you know, use more than one indicator. But a conference like this is very informative and very stimulating. I myself have gone through it. I think to some extent still do. I've seen some really blatant cases. You know, I was talking to somebody this morning, you know, at breakfast. I think he's a kid. You get so many indicators, you're exposed to so many ideas. You get so many indicators. You can spend so much time plotting, posting, computerizing, scanning, you know, that most of them are fairly redundant. If you look, as we did before, you look at the RSI pattern and the 25-day rate of change pattern, and you compare them to the MACD pattern, they're very similar. They're all measuring the price movement in a time frame. They're all going to be similar. How many similar patterns do you need to post? It doesn't help you to have a lot of redundancy. It's really better to settle in on one or two and get the feeling by use over a period of time of how that indicator flows. Get the feeling of the flow of your indicator. You know, it'll help you anticipate it and recognize its patterns rather than being all over the place with so many different ones that you can't keep track of. Similarly, you know, I got my misgivings about people trading in a lot of different markets except after using certain formalized systems where they don't really have to know the market, they're just following the systems. That's okay because system diversification tends to work well. But, you know, for the most part, you're better knowing, doing one thing and doing it well than trying to do a lot of things, and it's not going to be possible to do it well because you're doing too many things. You know? So if you track too many indicators, you know, they all give, you know, cross currents and contradictory indications, you know, and you read them the wrong way because you wake up in one mood, you know. So if I wake up afraid, I'm going to read an indicator one way. If I wake up optimistic, I'm going to read it another way, you know. Simplify it. Get it down to something you can manage and handle and stay with. You know, it's my advice anyhow. It's not part of this discussion. All right. We're up to chart 8 here now. Now, in my videotape, at this particular point, when chart 8 comes on, I have something, words, you know, whole words. I like to do photography, but I don't want to do a face. And it says here, it's flashing letters, buy fast, sell slow. Buy fast, sell slow. Now, what do I mean by that? What's this buy fast, sell slow routine? Well, I mentioned before, stock prices tend to take their time about topping. Market tops take a while to form. Market bottoms usually happen fast. Stock prices drop about twice as fast as they go up. The stock market rises historically about 75% of the time, but during the time that it falls twice as fast as when it goes up. Right? So if any of you guys live like I do, I'm a mutual fund trader, you know, and you know, we trade like hundreds of millions of dollars for people, and we take it very seriously, and we sit and we watch as the mutual funds creep up an eighth of a percent today, a quarter percent tomorrow, maybe a half a percent the day after, maybe after 2-3 weeks, I got 3%, it will begin to feel good. One bad day, poof, half the game goes. So the idea is, nonetheless, when you enter the market, or to use an MACD pattern or combination for buying, you generally want to use a faster one than you will use for selling. because you want to give a market's uptrend time to persist. You don't want to track it too closely, whereas you want to be positioned early following a downtrend. Okay? So, use at least two, and preferably three, MACD combinations in your work. Okay? For starters, we'll up the ante one more next chart, but for starters, we will use, say, a 12 and a 25-day combination for buying. We will use a 19 and a 39 combination for selling. Any time frame, okay? We do not have to change the numbers for the time frame. Use it for day trading, use it for position trading, use it for monthly trading, whatever you want, okay? Yeah, let me give you, if you're taking it down at this point, let me give you three of them, okay? We'll go through the whole deal. First of all, we want to measure the trend, okay? If the trend of the market is favorable, you want to make it easy to buy, right? If the market's in a good uptrend and you happen to be on a short-term sell, you want to get in there back in as fast and as easily as possible. So in the trend, you want to buy fast. So for uptrended markets, use a 6 and a 19. The MACD line will be constructed by subtracting a 19.6. I'll go get that with me. Okay. Okay. With a 3-day signal line, 3 to 5 day signal line. So we're gonna get in quick. 6 minus 19 with a 3 to 5 day signal line. If the trend is down, then we're going to slow up the buying a little bit. We're going to use a 12 and a 25-day combination with a 9-day signal line. Yeah, slow the buying a little. If the trend is down, we're going to make it a little harder to get in. So we'll use a 12 and a 25 with a 9-day signal line. The difference is maybe going to be, for practical purposes, 1 or 2 days, if it's a daily thing, of entry, but it'll just make it that much harder to buy. How do you measure the trend? You can use a 50-day moving average, or a 50-week moving average, or a 50-hour moving average, or a 50-something moving average. If that moving average is declining and accelerating in the decline, not just a little wiggle down, you know, but accelerating in the decline, switch from the fastest to the slow. If the moving average is still rising, indicating that all market trends are up, then get your fast entry. Yeah, you could. I mean, this is a rough gizmo. I mean, you know, sometimes at the bottom of an intermediate decline, you're going to have the 50-day moving average turning down a little bit, but the 30-week moving average is going to be rising so fast, I still consider the trend up. You know what I mean? It's just like, if we want to have something that you can pin your thoughts to, the 50-day moving average is as good as any. Right? It will not be terribly crucial, probably, really, if you use a 12 and a 25 for entry instead of a 6 or 19, it may mean a day or two. But clearly, if the moving average is rising, go with the faster one, because you got a real good entry there. The same other rules apply, by the way. MACD, whatever it is you're using for your buying, still has to fall below zero to get in, to consider the buy valid. Now, for yourselves, unless the trend is really down, I mean, you know, you really got a lousy trend, use the 19 and the 39 for your selling, with a 9-day signal line for that combination. That's a 19 minus a 39. If the trend is clearly down, then you can use the 12 and 25 for your selling as well as your buying. But most of the time, you'll do better if you use a 19 and 39. And remember, that has to get above zero before you can sell. We'll have other stop-loss provisos as we go along. I mean, you can't be left floating in the wind if things go terribly amiss, you know. But by and large, this is the sort of combination that I find works the best. Now, futures seem to have low commissions. I don't know how many of you guys are futures traders here. But the cost of a futures trade is not in the $18 or $25 you give Lynn Waldeck. The cost of the futures trade is the premium spread between you and the locals, or the fact that once a trend gets in motion, they open up a lot of premium between the S&P futures and cash. So when you buy that, you're paying maybe an extra point or two. When you sell downtrend, that premium is narrowed, and you lose just a couple points on the premium spread. By and large, the less often you trade, the better off you're going to be, because you will need, you'll have a chance to make greater profits in terms of the transaction costs of your accounts. Now, day trading is terribly seductive. I mean, if I go into the office and I got nothing to do, okay, I'll do a little day trading, you know. Hey, it's entertainment. Because that's not where I'm making my money, believe me. Yeah, I'm making my money on the longer positions, where I can build up a risk-reward ratio of 4 and 5 and 6 to 1 with my systems. On day trading, you can't make that kind of risk-reward ratio. So you have to be right 75-80% of the time. Okay, and it's not easy to be right 75-80% of the time. You know, a lot of the speakers come on. You know, naturally the speakers, so they got to be right 80% of the time. I like to see the trading, you know. I don't find it easy to be right 75-80% of the time. You know, and there's a lot of activity for relatively little money, whereas position trading is little activity for a lot of money. So in any event, if you can cut your transactions down, so much the better. Now, let's take a look and see how this sort of combination... Should we repeat them, or did everyone get them the first time? 619, three-day signal line if the trend's up, 1225 if the trend is down, or neutral to down, 1939 for selling. You buy when your buy line goes below zero, you sell when your sell line goes above zero, you know, as a precondition. Use a nine for mine. Again, this is not cast in stone.
All set? Okay, now, let's look at chart 8 here, and what do we see? You see a buy signal. We have two MACD combinations. We have a 13 and a 26, and a 19 and a 39. Now notice where this buy signal is generated. On the fast one, and where it would have been generated on the slow one. It was using the fast for the entry, it looks like you got in 2-3 days before you would have than if you used the slow one. Can you all see that? Okay. Now let's look at the exit. I don't know whether there were any crossings up in this area. It's a little hard for me to tell from the chart. Okay. We'll presume that they both sold out at the same time. Although it's possible, and certainly if not in this particular case, you know, another downtick here or there that made it happen. Notice how the slow MACD gives you a lot of room, no concerns at all about selling until the time to sell. Whereas the fast MACD, which did a better job on the buy side, may or may not have produced 2 or 3 sell signals before the slow MACD produced a sell signal. Here, maybe here. Okay? No question that the slow MACD stayed on a buy right up to the top. Here is the moving average, by the way, which we would use for determining which MACD pattern to buy. We used the 13 and 26 here, which is like a 12 and a 25, instead of the 6 and the 19, because the moving average was clearly falling. So if the moving average falling, it said we slowed down the buys a little bit. And notice we got really just about as good an entry as you could possibly get, you know? Yeah, shorting, same thing. But you look for negative divergences before you short. Don't short without a negative divergence, especially the U.S. stock market, because the U.S. stock market has an upside bias. And, you know, it's rising at the rate of 10% a year, so about 9 or 10% a year. So that's always playing against the short seller. You trade the currencies, you trade bonds, it's more or less, these markets are more or less flat over a long period of time. But the U.S. stock market has such a secular uptrend that it's really not easy to make money on the short side. Now, people like to keep playing it. Once in a while, it works fine. But by and large, of all the markets around, the U.S. market is basically an up market to play, not a down market. And especially since 1990, Up to chart 9. This is the U.S. stock market from 1984 to 1985. Basically, it was an uptrended market. A bull market was in effect. So that, therefore, we were using the 6 and the 19-day MACD line for buying, using the 19 and the 39 again for selling. We got a very nice buy signal here in December. Right. Now notice again that you would have gotten sell signals based upon the fast MACD. You're going to sell signal in December, another sell signal here in January. You did not get any sell signals based upon the slow MACD, which we recommend for sells, until middle of February. You can see how much better you did buying fast, selling slow. Buying fast, you notice you got a fast entry here while the slow one was still in a sell. Selling slow, we never actually saw a sell signal yet develop. You can all see the point made on the chart now. Remember, buying fast, you can see how much faster we got into the market. Selling slow, you can see how we could delay the sell until you actually got a sell signal. Whereas if you used a fast MACD for selling, you had all sorts of blips and wiggles along the way. This use of two MACD lines, one for buying, one for selling, simply reflects the characteristic way that stock prices move. You can see how the stock rolls around and takes its time. You just want to give it time to do its thing. Now, most timing indicators, we're not talking infallibility here with MACD. Yeah? It will generally play well if you trade in the direction of the trend, and not as well if you trade against the trend. Now, I'm not advising a lot of trend selection about going in and going out, because that may confuse the issue too much, as you actually try to apply it. Most trading systems are better if you just keep plugging away at them, and if you know how they behave, you have an idea of what your risks and rewards will be. This chart 10 simply shows what happens to MACD in a downtrending market. We're using, by the way, the same parameters, Buy to a sell, you kind of break even. Buy, we don't have quite have a sell, so we don't know how it worked out. The sells, however, were profitable if you played the market both sides. This is a dollar chart, not an S&P chart, so currencies, you can more easily play against, down as well as up. So when you play against a trend, in this case we're playing with a downtrend, you'll find that you'll make your money on the short side. You'll break even on the long side, more or less. If you're in an uptrend and you insist on going short, you'll make your money on the long side. You'll more or less break even on the short side. MACD, like most good timing systems or models, will hold you even if you're trading against the trend. You don't get wiped out. They will make the money when you're trading with the trend. But the idea is usually to keep plugging away, and make certain alterations, but basically you don't want to get too, again, not to confuse the thing, I just want to kind of point out it's in the, how it works. Now notice we use the 1326 here, not a 619, because the 50-day moving average is not only falling, it's accelerating on the downside. It's falling at a faster and faster rate, so this downtrend is accelerating, so you want to make it a little bit more difficult to buy. Okay, we're at chart 11 for the tape. For the listening public, very important chart. Right, mark this one up, very important chart, because this is going to have one more rule change. This is a chart of Treasury contracts in 1989. Because it was generally a reasonably favorable period for interest rates, or more or less anyway, I'm using a fast MACD, 6 and 19 MACD for buying, my slow selling MACD 19 to 39 days. Now what happens? We get a really nice buy signal in August. Right here? What makes this a really nice buy signal? Well, first of all, positive divergence, okay? Prices made a new low, MACD oscillator stayed flat, right? Positive divergence spread over a few weeks. That's a really nice pattern, right? So with a positive divergence, we're going to go for it. Okay, and wow, payoff, everything goes great, okay? Get a nice gap opening, all right? Some people will tell you that gaps should be filled. It's not the best thing to happen that a gap gets filled. A gap acts as support. If you see a gap, okay, the odds are the gap will not be, if it's a breakaway gap, okay, there's three kind of gaps. Breakaway gaps that start moves, measuring gaps that take place midway into moves, and you can use them to measure how far the move's going to go, and exhaustion gaps which take place at the end of moves. Right? You know a breakaway gap from an exhaustion gap because in a breakaway gap the prices keep rising after the gap, and in an exhaustion gap they don't. A measuring gap like divides the move and the gain up to the gap and project that a similar to take place after the gap. A move that starts with a nice breakaway gap is likely to be a good move, but that gap will not be filled so fast. So if you do day trading and the prices gap up in the morning, okay, either if that whole gap gets filled, there's a good chance the market's going to reverse to the downside. The gap should act as support. So we see this case here in the Treasuries. Right here you have a breakaway gap, and you see this gap acted as support. The next decline came right down, approached the gap, and never even went into it. Okay? Now, we have a good buy signal. Prices move up, okay, on both the fast MACD, which we use for buying, and the slow MACD. And now we get a sell signal, okay? At least it looks like a sell signal at the arrow. The slow MACD crosses from above to below a signal line. It's met all the conditions, it's above zero, so forth and so on. Okay. Now you could take the sell if you want to, you know, I won't fight with you. But if you like to play for longer trends, you have a reason not to take it. And here's the reason. There are no negative divergences in this price move. The fast MACD reached a peak right along with price, and this is a fast one which diverges easily. The slow MACD reached its peak right along with price. The decline in the MACD pattern took place right along with price. Okay? So up to the point of the sell, there are no negative divergences at all in this chart, this move. Therefore, you can give the market one more swing. That's the basic. No negative divergences, either in the buy MACD or in the sell MACD. If there's a negative divergence in the buy MACD, you would take the sell. but where there are no negative divergences to speak of in either the buy or the sell, you can go with it for one, you know, for one more swing. Always sell the second sell signal. We don't hang around after the second one, which the second one took place right here at the end of October. And you see there was even a third swing afterwards. Okay, it didn't go very far, but you know, we sold prematurely nonetheless. But still, the second one we take. The first one you can let bypass on the condition that there are no negative divergences at all that you can see to speak of. Yep. Yes, so the second peak there is. That's why but not at the time of the first peak, which is when the sell signal took place. The question is, was there not a negative divergence to here, right? Absolutely. That's why we've drawn it. Up here? Well, to me, they kind of peak out simultaneous. But, you know, if you want to read it that way, that's fine. I would consider this good enough, considering the speed of everything. Now, supposing that the prices come down, this gives a sell. Now, they're not going to stop and turn just because Appel said at a seminar, you don't have to take your sell, you know? You know, you got to have an out. That has to be a game plan. So where would you take your, where would you place a secondary stop? Because you always have to have a plan, you know? The hardest thing about trading, the really hardest thing, is to get the emotions out of the game, to get everything as objectified as possible. Right? It's not that trading systems are necessarily great. It's just that they give you a blueprint for doing something, as opposed to, I woke up fighting today. Right? Or I took a loss last time, I won't take another one. You know? Or, hey, it's only on paper. You know, I know a lot of people, you know, they get wiped out, but it's only on paper. Yeah. So wait for your stock to come back 98%, you know? And vice versa, people like to take profits. That's why people tend to take profits quickly, because it's a lot of fun to take profits, right? And people take losses slowly because it's miserable to take losses, you know? And it should work the other way. You should take your losses quickly and your profits slowly, yeah? So everything, you know, the whole point is that everything should be as objectified in your trading as possible. You can give, take it from me, I have given people the world's best trading systems and the people won't follow them. I'm not talking about what I sell, just what's given to people. They won't follow them because temperamentally it is hard to follow something mechanically. It's even boring to follow something mechanically. As opposed to, you know, I want to outsmart the system, I want to outsmart the boys on the floor, I want to outsmart Elaine Garzarelli, I want to outsmart Appel, so I'll do it my way, you know? Better you just follow the thing mechanically. Don't be a jerk. Just learn the rules and follow. You know, or create your own rules, even better than you're not a jerk, you created a better mousetrap. Okay? Anyhow, back to this. We have to have outs if this doesn't work. So we use the 50-day moving average as your out. Okay, if they keep going down, they penetrate below the 50-day moving average, call it a day. So you're risking, by not taking the sell, you're risking maybe a point. Right? That's as far as you should carry the risk. That would also drop into the support at the gap. If it went below that moving average, you'd be penetrating the gap at the same time. You know? I don't want to make too much of the gap, I'm just throwing it in, you know. But the main thing is no divergences or the most minute divergence. You want to give it another leg up. You can try it, but have a stop somewhere that's just in case. Okay? I would say in this chart I'd be using the 50-day moving average. You can create something of yourself, for yourself. But have a game plan. Don't ignore signals without a game plan. Most people, again, we're talking psychology, the temptation is you take a position and then you say, you wake up the next day and you say, wow, I did something, right? Now you're committed to that position. You begin to look for what's going to make you right. You look for, you find, if you subscribe to 1,000 newsletters, you find the 501 that are bullish. If you're long and you read gamma, huh? All right, and the other guys don't know what they're talking about. If you're short, you find the 499 that are bearish and you go with them. Yeah? I think it's much better to wake up in the morning and say, what's going to make me wrong? Because then you have a game plan for escape. If you keep the losses down, you're going to make money. So better say, what makes me wrong? What makes me change my mind? Now, we all know all sorts of high-profile investment advisors. And if you guys read the newspapers at all, you know how many high-profile guys get locked into a position for years and wipe out their reputations because they can't concede being wrong. In my newsletter, I almost never make a prediction. I have an automatic timing model. I say the timing model says this. I don't know. I don't even like the timing model, fellas. I don't even like what it's saying. But follow the model. Don't follow me. And I'm never really wrong. Because I'm never really right either. I never do anything heroic, you know. But I make money every year, you know. I make money. But, you know. And they don't, nobody hates me because I haven't, you know, set myself up to be a super guru, you know. But mentally even, I am not a super guru. I don't think anybody in the stock market is a super guru. I think the stock market exists to make as many dumb people look dumb as possible. And if you know that, and if you accept the fact that not only are they dumb, but you're dumb, yeah, and just get mechanical about the thing, and make your game plan, what if I'm wrong? That should be the first thing, what if I'm wrong? And then you act, you know? Here's another little gimmick that I use to kind of not so much improve the quality of my life. I don't know whether that does it, but it kind of gives me a feel to when a buy signal is going to be more reliable than not reliable. Now, you're always making two or three decisions at a time when you're buying and selling. You know, A, am I going to buy or sell? B, how much am I going to buy and sell? Right? And what am I going to buy and sell? Right? For mutual fund trader, okay, I have a choice. I could go 100% invested. I could go 50% invested for my people. I could go 75% invested. I can go on margin. I buy mutual funds to people on margin. We treat them a little bit like mini commodities. I could buy quiet funds, or I can buy funds of high volatility. These are all decisions I'm making at all times. Apart from whether I'm getting a buy or a sell signal. So if I get a buy signal that looks especially good to me, I'm upping the ante. If I get a buy signal that's so-so, I will follow it, but with less chips on the table. Right? Now, one characteristic of MACD lines, and again, this works for day trading as well as for longer-term MACD lines, swings often tend to take place in two waves. One, two. Again, one, two. The first wave, the MACD line moves away from the signal line. Then it moves towards the signal line. That completes the first wave. Then it moves away from the signal line. And then it moves towards the signal line. Between the lows of the move, the start of the move, and the bottom of that first wave, becomes a very easy place to draw a trend line. See this trend line? Connecting the low to the bottom of the first wave. If that trend line is penetrated at the same time you get a signal, it is likely to be a very reliable signal. Right? Let's follow the market down now, okay? One wave moves back to the signal line. Two waves at the end of the second wave, it crosses the trend line. And you notice we connect the trend line between the top and the high of the second wave. Can you all see that? Okay? Same thing coming up again now. We've got a buy. One wave comes down through the signal line. Second wave, we draw our trend line through the bottom of the wave. Same thing down here. This one, two-wave sequence, one, two, one, two, one, two, one, probably two's coming up right here, right? I don't know why it happens that way, but very, very often in MACD, you see this nice two-wave sequence, and because of the way the MACD lines are so smooth, it's very easy to draw a nice trend line through the, you know, valley that separates the two waves. If that trend line is broken or about to be broken at the same time you get a buy or a sell signal, the odds are that you're having a very, very reliable signal. Right? So that would be an indication to up the ante a little bit on yourself. Right, that's clear enough, right? Right, we've pretty much gotten through almost all the rules I'm going to get through. The rest is mostly examples. We can go on just till we run out of time for another half an hour's worth of examples. Let's take a couple of questions, just a couple, okay? Now, before we start with questions, a few years ago I went with Telerate on a tour of the Far East, you know, and I did my thing. And we got to Tokyo, and all the speakers noticed that these Japanese wouldn't ask questions. We said, you know, they could sell a lot of Toyotas, but they're afraid it would admit they're dumb. Well, it turns out that wasn't really quite the situation. They didn't ask questions because they were afraid to embarrass the lecturer. Because they figured if he didn't explain it right the first time, there was a good chance he wasn't going to be able to answer the questions and didn't want to make him look bad. So with that fine Far Eastern custom in mind, you just a change of direction of the histogram itself?
Yeah.
Okay, the gentleman is saying that he has found that on many occasions simply a change in the direction of the histogram works well in anticipation of a crossing. My own experience has been that this works fine in neutral markets, but that in trending markets it'll take you out much too soon. If you're long, the histogram will often turn down way in advance, sometimes only halfway into the move. And this was kind of interesting because on the same Far Eastern tour, we had a fellow who was using that approach. So he would speak before I would speak, or I'd speak before he'd speak. And he would say, Pell did a great thing in inventing MACD, but I'm one up on him because now I do this histogram change, you know. Then he'd show charts, and it really didn't work. You know, sometimes it works. It'll work in a neutral market, but it will not work in a trending market. And if I remember, I'll show you some examples of that, in fact, on this very next chart. So I would not, as a general rule, advise that as a procedure, but if it works well for you, you know, be my guest. Yes? Oh, good question. This is a very interesting question. The question is there a relationship between the significance of the divergence and the time frame over which it takes place? Is that right? That is a good question. Usually speaking, a divergence that exists over a period of between 3 and 5 weeks is more significant than one that exists over 3 and 5 days. 3 and 5 weeks for a divergence spread over 3 to 5 weeks on a daily chart is probably ideal. You know, and I think we saw some in some of the charts that I presented to you before when we were talking about divergences. If you look, you'll see that several of those divergences span at least a couple of weeks. One more, yeah.
What
buy? What, the flip one? Right.
Right.
Okay, good question. Let me see where the chart is. Okay, next chart. The question is, it's a good question too. If you're buying on a fast MACD and your slow MACD is trending down, so it's already on a sell, and something goes amiss, where's your out? And we'll cover that next chart. Two charts from now. It's a good question. We will cover it. Yeah.
I was hoping you'd find the time to discuss the use of time cycles.
Yeah, the question is to whether or not time cycles can be used with MACD. We will touch on it, but not to the length that the subject might be worth. Let me proceed along because we have just a half an hour or so before they. I don't know whether they actually press an eject button or what, but I'd like to see what we'd be doing.
To 1984 bull market, it's a weekly chart. So it's, you're constructed weekly, and, with weekly readings. We're using the same parameters now. 618 for buying, 19 and a 39 for selling. Okay, we haven't changed that. We could have, this is obviously done retrospectively, we could have just as well have used a 12 and a 25 for buying, but the sell one would not be different. Okay, we finally end up after one whipsaw, it looks like to me anyway, with a really nice buy signal somewhere within the final weeks of the bear market of 1982, which, by the way, was the last great buying opportunity we've had in the stock market for 14 years. I mean, prices have gone up since then, but they've been kind of defying the fundamental laws of gravity, whereas in 1982, not only were the technicals good, but the fundamentals were terrific. You know, and I'd like to say that I was as bullish then as I might have been, but I wasn't. I mean, my systems got me in, but, you know, it wasn't like I could have been. You know. Anyhow, we got a really nice buy signal. Notice a little double bottom here on the 6 and 19, and you get a buy, right? Now, we switch, by switching to the 19 and 39 for the sells, we were in that stock market July of 1982 until June or July of 83. You were in the market for the whole year, no sells, and just enjoyed the ride. Okay? By the way, here's a case in point where if you look at that histogram change on the fast, you'll see, or even in some areas on the slow, you'll see how you would have been out prematurely. Because if that happens in trended markets, the histogram will turn down and not produce sales. So just a case in point of how nicely the weekly slow MACD can keep you in a protracted bull market for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Okay? Now you notice you had some negative divergences also in the fast MACD, but it didn't affect anything because we're using the slow for sells. In relationship to the question that was just asked, you know, what if? Here we have a what if. We got just about as bad an entry as you could get. This buy signal occurred right on a big up spike day. This was a trade that I don't think gave more than 30 seconds of happiness. You probably had a few side days and then they began to drift down. There were a couple of sell along the way. I mean, the slow MACD gave a sell signal up in here where it drew the dotted line. And the fast one did, but let's presume that the slow one did not give a sell, and, you know, where would we have been out? As a final stop, you sell out if the fast MACD that you bought on makes a lower low. Now you notice here's the low. Come a little up. And if it makes a lower low, okay, that will have crossed its signal line for sure. You sell out. And the reason you sell at that point is because the lower low says the downside momentum is not decreasing, it's increasing. So there's only so, you know, only so long you could stay masochistic with a lousy trade. As it turned out, and as is often the case, in this particular instance, the low promptly reversed, and, you know, so you come back in again, but you come back in roughly the same level you went out. The main thing is you limit your loss somewhere. Now, sometimes it'll happen, and this is the stickiest of times. This is not the worst thing that can happen. The worst thing that can happen is that the decline in price after a buy, or the reverse after a sell, the decline in price continues without MACD ever making a lower low. In other words, the market comes down up, okay, you get a little blip enough to produce a buy signal, and then they just drift down day by day, drop by drop, bankrupting you. And MACD, meanwhile, is making positive divergence after positive divergence because the thrust of the decline isn't severe, just the extent and the length of it, okay? Somewhere, okay, and I don't have an answer for you here, you got to build up some kind of a point that says, hey, this is how many dollars I go and that's it, you know? This doesn't so much happen in the U.S. market, you know, the stock market, but I've seen this sort of chart in currencies a lot of times where they just kind of drift down, you know? The U.S. stock market's more choppy than that. So I don't know, have an answer for you. I mean, you know, but figure something out. You know, let's just don't let them take you down forever. But by and large, the immediate stop, if your MACD buy line makes a new low, call it a day, get out of the position. Okay, if you're wrong and they pop up after all, you'll get back in. You know, that's another thing. If you're wrong, you're wrong, you know. Don't let that change your next trade. You know, people will, you know, they'll take a buy signal, maybe they'll take a quick loss, you know, if they're smart enough to take a quick loss, because it's smarter to take a quick loss than a slow loss. And then there'll be another buy, and they won't want to go back in again. Because they just took a loss, and now they got to justify the sale. Each trade is discreet, and the way I keep my ego act is to say, I didn't make the decision, the stupid system made the decision. My decision is only whether I follow the stupid system. Okay? Now, sometimes I have to go through my thing. Well, this system's really stupid, should I keep following it? Then I gotta go back and check my research for the last 26 years. Yeah, okay, this happened in 1978, it happened in 1983, so if it's happening in 1996, I got to expect it. So maybe it's a predictably stupid system, and I got to live with its mistakes. Or the system is stupid, but today it's the best system I got, so I'm going to go back and do some more research. Maybe I'll find a smart system, but I'm still following the system, so it's the system that is making mistakes, but it's not even making mistakes. My research says that 46% of the time my trades are going to be losers. Get used to it. That's the game. Almost any trading system you will find will have a big percentage of losers. The main thing is that the size of the winners be bigger than the size of the losers. So the intermediate trading system that I use in my newsletter is right about 54% of the time. It's wrong about 46% of the time, which doesn't sound like any big deal. But the winners are four times the size of the losers. That's where I make the money. This will be true of almost any system, and you'll be encountering a number of them, just being only 8 o'clock in the morning on Friday. You'll be hearing a lot. You have to get yourself in the mindset. It is not you. Your ego should be in the game. Not into your decisions. Your ego should be, if anything, into developing your game plan. If you have a good game plan and you follow it, you'll do well. No good. If you don't follow it, it doesn't matter what kind of game plan you have, you're not going to make out. Okay? Here's another case. Again, we're back on weekly charts. This is 1985 to 1987. All right? Nice buy signal in here. Took a sell. Came back in the middle of 1986 with another buy. These are all weekly charts. Same parameters, by the way. 6 and 19 and 1939. Now, we come into 1987. I don't know. This is a fairly young audience. I mean, you know, soon I'm going to be the only guy in the world who remembers 1987, yeah? Two of us, yeah. I mean, I suspect I may be one of 10 people at this conference who remembers the bear market. I mean, there are such things. I mean, there really were such things, you know? Right? So, 87 was actually one of my happy moments. We were 100% in cash on the day. Not because I predicted the crash, and I never said anybody to anybody before, since, or during that I ever predicted the crash. I was in cash because my systems went on a sell. So I followed the system, and I woke up one day, and I found I was a hero. Wow. Right? And people say, boy, were you smart. You know, to this day, clients will say, boy, were you smart. And I don't know whether I was smart. I don't know whether I was smart or lucky or both. And I still think that way. You know? It wasn't me. Now there are thousands of people who predicted the crash. I mean, just read the newsletter advertisements. Everybody predicted the crash. I know I didn't predict the crash, but I was out of the market. I don't know where those were. Okay? Go back to 87, okay? And we have a nice buy signal here in the middle of 86, and everything goes nicely. I mean, we really got this one going. The long-term MACD is going up. The short-term is going up. It was below zero to buy. Right. Now we get a crossing of the zero of the MACD line over the signal line in April. Do we take the sell? Well, you could have. I mean, I wouldn't kill you if you did. But do we have to take the sell? No. Why not? No divergences. Not here, not here. So we could have hung in for one more go-around. Okay? If we didn't take the sell, where would the stop have been? Here, at the 50 average, 50-week moving line, 50-week moving average line. They come up again, up. Do we take this sell? Yeah, why? A, we always take the second one. B, divergences. Nope, no divergences. A little divergence, okay? But anyway, we take the second one. Luckily, it got us out a week or two before the crash. Okay? Where did MACD get us back in? Not bad. Not a bad entry after that smash, right? And this is all on weekly stuff. Monthlies. This covers a this chart 16 covers a 10-year period from 1968 to 1978. Same old parameters, 6 and 19, 19 and 39. Only now we're doing monthly charts, not weekly charts. Sell signal here in the early spring of 69, about 3 months after the bull market, the 1966-68 bull market came to a close. Buy signal in May of 19, looks like about August of 1970, about 3 months after the bottom of the bear market in May. Sell signal in March of 1973, I believe, about 3 months after the bull market came to an end. Buy signal looks like December 74 or January 75. Also, the bear market came to an end. Lows were made in December, though the effective end of the bear market was September. And finally, a sell signal in roughly the middle of 1977, which was about three or four months after the peak. For this particular time frame, for a long-term bull market, bear market sequence of signals, I don't think you really could have done much better. It has not done quite as well since. A, there's been no bear markets to speak of hardly since then. And these waves, I mean, this sort of wavy pattern, that's just great, you know, for trading. By the way, you, while we're just on another subject, or just digress a bit, support levels and resistance levels. People generally talk about a resistance level as being just above a previous low, and a support level as being just above a previous low, and a resistance level as being just below a previous high. You know what I'm talking about? Actually speaking, in my own opinion, resistance levels take place not just below previous highs, but just above previous highs. And support levels take place not just above preceding lows, but just below preceding lows. All right? It's not quite, so this is why I think people get stopped out a lot, is they place their support, their stops, at or just above a preceding low, or just slightly below it. And that's where the support comes in time after time. They knock out the stops and turn the market up. Now, if we look at this long-term chart, okay, the peak takes place just above the previous peak. Not below it, above it. This bear market low takes place low these lows. Right? I just mentioned it here because I happen to see it on the chart and it just comes to my mind. But if you look at charts regularly, you'll see that this is very, very often the case, that the best market bottoms occur when a previous low has just been taken out. And then you get a bounce, okay, then first they knock out a couple stops, and then they turn them right up. And sell signals occur just after a previous high has been taken out. Now, if you think about it, of course, this is when all our divergences come into play, right? When new lows are made, but momentum doesn't make new lows, or new highs are made, and they're not confirmed by momentum, right? So you know, I just mentioned it, if hoping it's of use somewhere. Chart 17, just to show the application, we went from 30-day monthly chart to a 30-minute chart. Again, this is an S&P contract, March 1990. It was in a downtrend at the time, you know, on a half-an-hour basis. So as we would expect, the trades that were made against the trend were just moderately profitable or break-evens, but the trades that were made in accordance with the trend were quite profitable. It's not really, you know, probably much more on the chart to make a fuss over. The question came up about time cycles and MACD patterns. There's a lot more we could say about time cycles in general and about time cycles applied to MACD, but there's only so much time. One of the things I look for to, again, help me assess the strength of a signal is whether an MACD buy or a sell signal is occurring at a time cycle. Now, there are certain time cycles in the market. But the market, if you subject it to some kind of Fourier analysis, or sometimes by eye you could see just as well, moves in little waves, you know, like little sine waves, and the cycle is measured from low to low. So in other words, if you're a day trader and you have hourly charts of the S&P 500, you'll find that there's a very regular 4 to 5 day trading cycle. It shows up very well on the hourly chart. So in any 5 day sequence or 4 day sequence, the stock market will usually move about a day and a half up, 1 day flat, and about a day and a half down. Or if the trend is very favorable, it'll move maybe two and a half days up and a day and a half flat, but you can see the formation of the cycle, and it's a good cycle to day trade with. Because you take your longs as you anticipate the 4 day cycle coming to a close, and you usually got a good day, day and a half you can hold in there pretty safely. Now there's 4 day cycles, 10 day cycles in the market, about a 6 to 7 week cycle, an 18 to 20 week cycle, and there used to be a 26 week cycle, and up until recently there was a very pronounced 4 or 4.5 year cycle. The 4.5 year cycle worked like a charm, I guess, from about 1962 to about 1986 when it stopped working. You know? But for a while, I mean, people were making all sorts of trading systems based on the four-year cycle. Of course, when you take 20 years of four-year cycles, what you have is five events. there are five cycles, and any statistician will tell you it's pretty hard to make a big case on a 5 year, on five events, you know. But nonetheless, you know, people did it, I did it, everyone's having a good time with the 4 year presidential election cycle, you know, until it starts working. Now, what this chart shows here is we have, and this is how I tend to use it myself without going into much more detail, we have from here to here a low to an important low, 98 days, which is about 98 trading days, which is about 20 weeks. There's a good 20-week cycle in the market, so I consider this a fairly significant cycle. Now, all I'm doing is this is history. This is gone. I know it's there. We are now here. And I am looking for my next important buy entry level. And if this was 98 days, I am looking for a buy to take place at around the same time. If I get a buy signal taking place at around the same time, I say, this one cyclically has good support. Because it's running on the same cycle. And you can see the flow, you know? You can just kind of see it happening. So this buy signal looks very, very promising. 98 days, and act accordingly. Now sometimes you can't pick up a cycle, in which case forget the whole subject. I mean, this is not a standalone item. It's one of the things, like the trend lines we looked at before, that lend support to the concept of the type of signal you have. Here's another one. This time it's based on about the 13-week cycle. It took place. 1988 was a really good year for trading. We had this kind of moves all over the place. And again, we have 65 days. The next 65 days, this one looks like a real good buy because it's picking up the same cycle. And you can kind of see the rhythm of the market. Right? Now again, I would not buy because it's 65 days. But when I get a buy signal and it is 65 days and I have everything else going so nicely, that, like, you know, tells me to maybe ratchet up my ante a little bit more. That's chart 19 for the tape. Okay. We're going to really move along here. Here's what I was talking about before, when MACD gives you, you know, really bad fits. And that starts in, we're on chart 20, starts with November of 1982. Now this is the 19 to 39 day MACD. We saw this period before in a weekly chart. Remember that one? When I was jumping up and down, you know, gloating about how I was in the market for a year. You know, that's because I switched to weekly, you know, 10 years after the fact. Yeah. Here, if I'm laboring with the daily one, okay, I got a problem because this gradual type of uptrend is murder for this chart. You just did not get good, clean lines. It's not like that chart we saw just before of 1988, the 65-day cycle, where the lines were nice and clear. This sort of narrow-channeled drift up or down is tough on MACD. It's tough on almost anything else too, but it's really tough on MACD. So you may as well know it and be prepared. Okay. Now I don't know whether by this point, you guys like MACD, whether you love MACD, whether you hate MACD. You know, I don't know what your attitude is about it, and I'm not going to take a poll. But I gave you my word before, I think I said so, that of all the technical indicators I know, there is nothing as good as MACD as catching the bottom of severe market declines. We'll go through three really fast. The book you have includes a few more. The section of the book, you know, there are a few more examples in the book.
I'll go through four right now. Okay, this is 1973. Okay, a bear market started in January of 73. It kind of drifted down into June and July. Between August and October, there was a really good rally of about 16-17%. Everybody said the bear market was over. Not everybody, but a lot of people. And MACD gave a proper sell signal right at the October peak. Okay, one for the good guys. And we then had what amounted to about a 20% decline in 6 weeks. Right, the New York index comes from 60 to about 48. Okay, where did MAC put you back into the market? 2 days from the bottom. Okay, then we had another entry with this nice rising double bottom, positive divergence, right? This wasn't much of a rally, but it did carry into March of 1974. Okay, so you can see that entry. Same thing, this is 1980 was March of 1980 was quite a period. That's when gold hit $800 an ounce, and the Hunt brothers tried to corner the market on silver and got themselves, I don't know whether they were thrown in jail or something. Interest rates were 15% and 17%, and I didn't have the good sense to buy any long-term bonds for myself. The Republicans caught Jimmy Carter with something called the Misery Index, which was some sort of combination of interest rates and inflation and unemployment or something. And the stock market in February took itself quite a hit, coming down something over about 22% again in 6 weeks. Now, this point right here, this was one of Joe Granville's finest moments. He had a very wide following at the time. He gave a buy signal right on this low tick, partly because it was he who said it, maybe for other reasons. The market was up 40 points the next day, and that was good for another year. In those days, 40 points was 40 points. That was it's not like 40 points nowadays. It's like equivalent to about 250 points today. Now, MACD nor I, neither one of us have the charisma of Joe, but we did beat him in the market by 2 weeks. If you take a look where our buy signal took place. And again, 2-3 days from the lows. Yep. Well, I'll show you the chart right now where everything is still in. And I'll show you where we got him. Okay. '89. There was a mini crash in '89. You guys may remember in October. We were out of that one too. I didn't call it either. We just happened to be out. And where did we make the entry? Right here. Crash. We came in right here. I don't think you can get much of a better entry than that following that sort of decline. I don't really trade individual securities, so I really can't speak too much on it. I know a lot of people who tell me that they're using MACD very happily in individual securities. I would say just experiment. That's really all I could say about it.